afternoon, everybody. We're really in for a treat today. Our speaker is Ann Klein of Ann Klein Communications Group. My name is Jennifer Johnston. I'm president of Delaware PRSA, and I'm so thrilled that you could join us today because Ann is a nationally known expert in crisis communications, and I've known her for many, many years. And not only is she extremely talented in what she does, but she's a truly, genuinely nice person. As a counselor to top management, Ann is recognized as an expert in strategic planning, crisis and issues communications, and community outreach. She's a member of the Public Relations Society of America's College of Fellows, which is a very elite group of practitioners. She's received numerous honors for her professional activities and accomplishments, including induction into the Philadelphia Public Relations Association Hall of Fame. Under her leadership, her agency has won numerous awards for excellence. Today, she will discuss what to do before a crisis hits, crisis communication management, and recovery. We're fortunate to have Ann join us today. Ann Klein.
Thank you. I have to tell you that I became an expert in crisis communication totally by serendipity because I always did media relations. And when I worked for Sunoco in the late 70s and the early 80s, I guess I got lucky. We had a gasoline shortage. One night my boss came in and he said, by tomorrow morning, would you please have a plan on my desk? We're going on heating oil allocation tomorrow, which is what has me thinking about planning. And he said, so I need to know what we're going to do. And I thought about it, and I had all these wild ideas, and I boiled them down to four. But the one that I suggested we do was that every Thursday morning at 10 o'clock at a location in Philadelphia, we have a news briefing on what's going on, how much oil do we have, how much shortage are we, whatever. And so I got pretty well known over the course of the next couple of years for these news briefings, and suddenly from doing this crisis communication for the oil company, a couple of people in the chemical industry said, gee, if she can do it for an oil company, I guess she can do it for a chemical company. And then my first hospital client came about in 1986 where the hospital client needed an incinerator, and they said, oh gee, if she can do crisis communications with oil and chemicals, I guess she could do an incinerator for a hospital. And suddenly my career in my own agency was born as in crisis and issues. So it was one of those opportunities, I guess, that I just took advantage of as we went along the way. And you know, when you start doing crisis, then you do have community outreach, and then issues become crisis. So if you're interested in this crazy field of issues and crisis communication, and you have the opportunity, just take advantage of it and go with it. And I hope our discussion today, maybe I can give you some tips and some ideas that will help you plan for crisis and then manage them and how to recover. I have given this planning presentation over the years, and I've changed it and updated it, and about a few days ago I was thinking about it. All of a sudden I said, oh my gosh, I think a crisis happens every single day. You can't turn on the news and there's not a crisis happening. Jennifer told me just this morning, a representative of BP was on Good Morning America talking about the spill. And no compassion, no caring, no sympathy, point the finger. It wasn't our rig. It doesn't belong to us. When we figure out what happened, then we'll, hello, where is your head? Are you concerned about 11 of your employees who died? Are you concerned that they're going to set the Gulf of Mexico on fire to disperse this oil? You've got 42,000 gallons of oil a day flowing. I don't know where their heads are. So it occurred to me that certainly some of these crises are more serious than others, but some really have the potential to take your organization down. And BP better get a wake-up call, not that BP is ever going to go down, but I just get the sense that there aren't a lot of crisis communications plans out there. There are a lot of operational plans. In healthcare, you've got to have some. In the oil industry, you have to have operations plans. In all the industries, you have operations plans, but nobody thinks about the communications aspects. Toyota's the biggest, just the biggest shock to me. I'm the type of person that has to make sure I know everything before I'm ready to meet an audience, and I decided to go back and read. I don't know if you get Bulldog Reporter, but I went back for about 4 months and read the Daily Dog PR briefs. And what I had forgotten, or maybe I just didn't think about, was that the PR person at Toyota had advised Toyota to go public back in January. And someone out of Tokyo, in their infinite wisdom, said, oh, we don't have all the facts. We've got to investigate. So we really need to just wait. Well, yeah, they waited until the problem was identified. Has the problem really been identified? In my mind, I don't think so. So here they are in this terrible shape. And then we've got the Catholic Church, and we've got the Boy Scouts. Oh, good heavens. This just gets... And then Tiger Woods. I don't know how you feel about Tiger, but you know what? Get rid of that hangdog face, Tiger. Stop looking like you're really upset and apologize like you really meant it or forget it. Friends of mine told me, though, as women, we probably are more upset about Tiger than the guys. If you're sports fans and Tiger's winning tournaments, you really don't care. I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know how I feel about that, but I still think he probably should have cleaned up his act. I was also upset when I had read something about Tiger that he had filed lawsuits in London and in Scandinavia to prevent certain things being said about his reputation because he was so concerned about his reputation. After all this thing blew up on Thanksgiving, I thought, now I know why he was suing, you know, but he can't get away with that in this country. And then our latest scandals. The SEC attorneys, don't you love it? They're supposed to be regulating our financial industry, and they're there downloading porn. And now we've got one of the guys at the Constitution Center in Philadelphia on child porn. He had tons of it in his computer. I think he got 5 years in jail, or that's one of the sentences. Then we have the new immigration law in Arizona. Whoa, you know, the more noise you make, it doesn't matter that 70% of the people are in favor of it. I don't want to get political here, but you got 70% in favor and you got all this noise going on. I mean, I think Arizona's got a crisis. And Jennifer had written down the Tea Party. I guess the Tea Party's a crisis for certain groups of people. It's not a crisis for others. So we won't go there. But whether it's government or whether it's business or whether it's nonprofit, there is so much going on every day. And I look at it and I think, you know, it's integrity. We're not seeing it in a lot of instances. It's ethics. Whatever happened to codes of ethics, and in some instances, it's just really an issue of morality. And so, whatever happened to the crisis that came about because something failed operationally, or we had a human error, those things we could accept, but the ones now that are just the integrity, the ethics, the morality, I'm finding it personally disturbing, and I think we try to tell our clients, please do the right thing. You know, you have to do the right thing. But organizations think they can get away with it. Yep, we can get away with it. Somebody's going to know the truth. And in so many of these instances now, we are seeing whistleblowers. The whistleblower for Toyota was an in-house attorney. I think you all know that. I mean, this guy had the facts. So somebody's going to know the truth. And then I realized, as I was thinking about today, all you need is one unhappy blogger, one tweet, one post on Facebook. Doesn't matter if you never dreamed it was going to be a crisis, it becomes a crisis because it just keeps going. And what happens? 24-hour news, they're so desperate for being first and having all these scoops that they're going to follow the bloggers. And so then the bloggers pile on more. And then more social media picks up. And then you're just praying, oh dear God, please let those headlines go away. Well, they don't go away because we're not, as PR people, or let's say our companies, are not prepared to respond fast enough. We are not stupid as PR people. We pick up the issues, we hear the rumors, but I think sometimes we just don't have that seat at the table that we need, or we just don't have the ear of the CEO to say, please listen to what we are saying. I think that the biggest problem is that we're not brought in early enough. There's an emerging issue, and when do we as PR people get called? We're lucky if we get a couple of days' notice, but usually it's the night before saying, we're going to announce tomorrow. At your table, I wrote a piece in Ad News, and I really didn't write it for those of us in this room. I'm mailing it out to clients and CEOs because it's called, you know, the era of planning in the social media environment. You've got to have some time for when everything converges on you. So I just don't think we're in early enough, and I think we're things are escalating because we just don't have a plan. We have to be alert on what's being said in social media. In my opinion, I think that Pepsi and Coke really read the tea leaves when they got a lot of grief, but they took the sugar sodas out of the schools. I would love to know what's being discussed at McDonald's right now about Ronald McDonald and the little toys that one county in Santa Clara won't let them offer a little toy in their Happy Meals. So I'm wondering, I'd love to know what's going on. And I do think that restaurants are going to start getting really smart before they get too much regulation from the FDA and from all the consumer groups. I think we're going to be seeing more and more postings on their websites and on their menus of calories and fat and so on. So everything's moving. It's moving very quickly. And I think that the problem is that we just don't communicate fast enough. And the reason we don't communicate fast enough is that we haven't done the PR planning in advance. When you don't have that plan and you go to your CEO and you ask, and it's, oh no, the CEO is a little delusional. We can't believe this thing is really happening. Or we're really arrogant. We're the biggest. We're the best. Blah, blah, blah. It can't happen to us. Or it can't happen here. It's because of X, Y, and Z. And it's funny, I had in here finger pointing and blame, which is exactly what BP did this morning. So you got to say something. You can't be in denial. You've got a plan, and you have to acknowledge what's going on. You can't hide anymore. There's no place to hide, and there's no place for insincere apologies. A couple of newsletters back, I wrote a column that said, I'm sorry really doesn't cut it anymore, and it doesn't cut it for me, and it doesn't cut it for a lot of people. For those of you who have done any risk communication, it's a little different from crisis PR. Risk communication, you've got to have a really good track record as a chemical company, as an oil company, in all of your outreach, so that when you say you're sorry and you're going to fix it, you've got that track record behind you that people are going to believe that you're really going to do it. Well, if you don't have any track record and you say, I'm sorry, it's pretty hollow. So then you really have to put something in place that you can announce that you're going to do and start immediately to do that corrective action. The I'm sorry just doesn't make it for people anymore. And obviously, the politicians have all heard the PR advice they've had in the past, all the CEOs. I'm sorry used to be real. It's what we all used to tell our clients and our companies to say. Apologize, tell them what you're going to do, and move on. Well, it's not as credible anymore because there's no track record for some of them. So when you don't get it right, what happens? How long do negative feelings persist? Well, Exxon is always going to have that footnote at the bottom that says, and there was the Valdez, although I think BP is going to eclipse them. And there's always going to be a footnote in Tiger's history. You do survive, you do move on, but what is your legacy? So it really comes down to the planning. What we like to do with our clients is we like to take a scenario-based approach. Get your clearance from your CEO, you really have to, or the planning doesn't work, so you got to convince him or her that it really pays to know what you're going to say. Go through a scenario-based process. It's highly engaging, and if you get in HR and attorneys and finance and operations, and you get people in a room and you say, let's just start, tablet sheets all around the wall. What can happen to this company, whether it's in HR, whether it's in finance, whether it's in operations, whatever it is, let's put it up there. And then your next question is, what else keeps you awake at night? That's when you may want to go in the room with the CEO privately. You can't imagine what keeps them awake at night. Some really bizarre stuff that you'd never dream of. And you plan all those. And you say, okay, fine. Now, what do we do if any of these things happen? Operationally, you have things that you're going to do when there's a fire. You're going to get people out of the building, right? You're going to call the fire company. This is not rocket science. The IT goes down. For the larger organizations, you all have backup companies that are maintaining your records off-site, so you know what you're going to do. So why, when there's a crisis that occurs, you don't have something very quickly that you can say that says, we've called the fire department, the alarm's been activated, we're getting people out, we all have assigned spaces that we have to meet, we're hoping everybody's okay, and as soon as we know more, we'll get back to you. This is not difficult to do, but no, people don't do it. And you can do it for anything. Crisis planning gets you through the first couple hours. It can't get you beyond that because you don't know what's going to happen after that. But certainly, how you manage those very first few minutes to the hour of your crisis is really going to set the tone for preserving your organization's reputation. There are crises that really could affect the very nature of your business, and heaven only knows that AIG and Goldman Sachs and Toyota, I mean, we don't know how their businesses are going to be in the long run. But other crises are really different. You have an executive who falls ill. You have an H1N1 flu epidemic that just runs through your organization. If you can respond fast and you can respond first, you're going to set that tone before anybody else can set it for you, and that's the secret. You've got to be out there before the bloggers are out there, before the media gets that story. You want to frame it. You want to tell your own story. Our philosophy is you set the agenda. You set it as quickly as you can set it. So that when you, once you've got all of these scenarios and your messaging, then a crisis really isn't a surprise. It could be unexpected because it happens at the worst time. And those of you in hospitals, I mean, crisis for me would be you've got a whole day planned and Jayco shows up on the door. I mean, that would always be my crisis. Or in manufacturing, suddenly OSHA shows up for an inspection. But again, you certainly know that there are certain things you can plan for. Not every single thing, but if you have enough scenarios put together and enough responses put together, certain things are going to look like certain other things, so you can be out there. There's one area I touched on a little earlier that we as PR people are so sensitive to, and those are those latent issues or emerging issues that could mushroom into a crisis. Our recommendation to our clients is you may not want to put an issue situation into your crisis communication plan, but you sure as heck are going to want to have a separate section of your plan that deals with these latent or emerging issues, because sooner or later they're going to happen. One of the reasons that we've heard so often, and I'm sure you've heard it from your companies, is that we don't have time to write a plan. We don't have the budget to write a plan. There's this excuse, there's that excuse, there's whatever excuse. And then the biggest one is that it's never going to happen here. It's just so shocking to me how few people really have these crisis plans in place or up to date. Just make a list within your own industry category of all the awful things that have happened. Just go put it on your CEO's desk. If they say that this can't happen here, you got some decisions to make. You know, you always make sure you've caught up on your sleep. Maybe one of the examples that you can always use, and it certainly has put this organization in great stead for years, and even though they flubbed a little earlier this year, was Tylenol. They had no crisis plan. They had no operational plan. They had no idea what the heck to do, except they had a mission statement, and that mission statement was do the right thing, and by gosh, that is what they did, and they still stand as an excellent example of a company doing the right thing, even though they had no guidelines. Now, it took them 7 days to get Tylenol off the shelves, and in this environment, that would be way too long. But they set that philosophy that companies still follow today. So doing the right thing is the most important thing. And as you write your crisis plans, your communications plans, and you look at your operations, how you would handle these various scenarios, if you keep in mind your mission and your vision of your company, of your organization, of doing the right thing, you will find what you need to put into those first statements. And I tell you, above everything else, human life is where it is. And after that, trust me, it's pets. Look at the rescues out of New Orleans. Look at the stories that make the news about rescuing dogs. Look at that dog in Alaska who saved his owner by by just barking at this state trooper, and the trooper said, I sort of got the message that I should follow, and their house is burning down. So people and pets, that human life is the most important. Once you get this process started, just be sure that everybody on this big crisis team, even if the operations person says, I don't know why I'm in here, yeah, it's important because you have things that could happen in your area. Get their buy-in. If you can't get the buy-in, you're really, really hitting your head against the wall. So try to do that. And then after you've begun this list of scenarios, I think it's important to determine the impact of them, but it's sometimes the one with the least impact that has the biggest potential to blow up. So even though you say that this could be the most likely, if you're in a chemical industry and you're working at a plant, yeah, your most likely, most serious one could be an explosion. But, you know, you could have other little things that might happen. It could be something as simple with somebody comes to the door and isn't treated properly getting into the plant or something like that. It's not high on the list of awful things, but suppose you didn't treat somebody right and it was a really important person. So take a look at that. And then after you get those statements together, just remember that those statements are used in that golden hour. That's where it all happens. So after that, you really got to have another really good process in place. And that is, who are your audiences? Really, your employees are first. Your closest audiences are first. Make a list of these audiences inside out. And then identify who is going to communicate with those audiences. Who's the employee communications person? Who's the person that calls the mayor and the city council? Who's the person that, if you're a publicly held company, gets the analyst on the phone? All these different audiences, because you can't do it alone. And then make sure these people are all spokesperson trained so they know how to do it. In addition, after you've got the audience, the person responsible, what is the quickest and best way to notify that audience? Because you got to be able to, boom, you can't wait anymore. So definitely you want these audiences identified. How are you going to reach them? Who's responsible? And after 8 hours, you're seeing double, so make sure that everybody's got some backups. And then, as you go through the plan now, who's the spokesperson for this scenario, this scenario, this scenario? It doesn't always have to be your CEO. If there are deaths, if there's incredible devastation, yeah, you probably want your CEO. But maybe you don't need your CEO. Maybe it's somebody else. So you have an executive spokesperson. That person doesn't have to be an expert in what happened. That person has to be kind, compassionate, understanding, sympathetic, that really expresses how your organization feels about what happened. Most important thing. Then you have your technical spokespeople. These are the folks who know the nitty-gritty, who can really discuss what happened. Most of the media these days really don't have the time to understand the minute details. So your technical spokespeople have the credibility in explaining what happened, but you got to get them spokesperson trained too, so they don't go so deep in the weeds that nobody understands what they're saying. But you need those two levels of spokespeople identified. And I always like to bring this one up because I think you can all relate to it. When you're thinking spokespeople, don't ever forget that Sago Mine disaster where they didn't have good communications channels, they didn't have the right spokesman, they said everybody was alive and everybody was dead except one guy. So if you ever needed a reason for good spokespeople, that's it. Then once you've got all this done, most of your organizations have operational drills. Ask to be included so that there's a spokesperson or there's a communications element in those drills. Believe it or not, we've been in a lot of drills, and where everything falls down is in communication. You go put a microphone up to the plant manager or to the hospital CEO or to somebody else, and they're like, duh. And that's a good way to get people a wake-up call to say, you know what, we really do need to rehearse and we do need to have a better response here. So make sure that you're in that loop on the operations drills, you put the communications part in it, and then evaluate your results. And it's always fun to evaluate results because they're really awful, and that's fine. It's good because you learn. You can also use as examples for your management when you're doing your crisis planning that crises are now done in real time. They're covered in real time by the media. They're certainly covered in more than real time by the cell phones and the Twitters and everything else. Just remember, what started it was Columbine. Columbine was covered 24 hours, and it never stopped. Talking heads. And what's even worse than the talking heads trying to making it up as they go is when the talking heads start to have these philosophical conversations among themselves, and they're speculating and they're all over the place. So that's a good reason why you need to be out there first and set that agenda. And as wonderful as that whole miracle on the Hudson was, and US Air, they went this much higher in my estimation, they were criticized for not being out there fast enough. For heaven's sakes, people were on the scene with their cell phones. Now, I would have some advice for US Air. Somebody calls you and says, you've had a crash, and it's on the TV. You don't have to figure out what happened. You have operational plans when you have a plane crash. Say it. You don't know who's alive or dead. If you see people there, you can be thrilled that there are people standing on the wings. You can say, we have activated our response plan. Our executives are going. We've talked to the police. We'll be talking with the fire officials. We're talking to rescue. You don't have to wait for 2 hours to get your website up, and it was good. They did, and they had their manifest up, but they got criticized for being too slow. So I think when something's staring you right in the face, this is where your communications that go with your operations really works. Otherwise, you get the speculation, you get the what-ifs, you get all these kinds of things. Don't let a vacuum occur. If you've got a few hours where nothing's going on, keep saying what you were saying. Just don't let the vacuum occur, because that's when all sorts of speculation takes place. I could go on and on and on, but one thing, I get very passionate about this, but I would recommend that everyone have a dark site that's hooked onto your website. It's a few pages that are there. They have maybe a little bit more information about your organization. They have maybe a little bit more about your CEO or contact information. Maybe there's something on there. You know the 800 number that you're going to use. We want you to have an 800 number. We suggest making sure you have people who can respond to email. So all that can be on your dark site ready that you can just turn it on. Now, if you don't have a lot of this in-house capability, there are email companies. There are blast fax companies. There are voicemail companies. There's text services you can use. There are organizations that will keep your crisis plan stored online, off-site, and you can use it and activate it. And in a crisis, if you're in Paris and somebody's in San Francisco and somebody else is somewhere else in the world, you can all log on to that site and you can be working together. There are strategic partners out there who can help you with that sort of thing. If you just remember to run these scenarios, think of what they are. What could keep you awake at night? What's the right thing to do? Who are the audiences that need to know? How can you let them know quickly? You will be so much better in the long run. And also, don't forget, even if you don't know anything, you have your basic information kits about your companies. You have the key messages that you want people to know about your company. So when you run out of stuff to say, just fall back on basic information about your company. You think everybody knows how big you are, how many employees you have, where you do business, what you do. We love to think everybody knows all about us. They don't. So you can fill it in. So that's really my message today, is to get a plan together and think of all the things that you would have to know and then write it down. I don't care what you put it on. Put it on a CD. Put it on a thumb drive. You know what? Put it in a three-ring binder, because just remember what happened in New York during the blackout. Nobody's cell phones worked. Nobody's computer worked. The old word of mouth, put it on a bulletin board. Have a transistor radio. What is a transistor radio in my office? What's a transistor radio? Okay, something that runs on batteries. But you need those sorts of things. So have that all done. And once you've got it all nicely put into place, there are only two last steps. One is, give it to your legal department. I don't care if it takes them 2 months to read it. Maybe give it to them in small bits and pieces. Let them read it. Let them pre-approve it. You do not want to have to go to them to make your first statement. That's where the big hang-up takes place. And Jennifer, that's what was going on with BP this morning. The lawyers were running that show, as the lawyers are running too many shows. All deference to my recovering attorney husband. Now, he's enlightened. Journalist before attorney, so he's there. So get it pre-approved, and then make sure you have the right logistics so that if a crisis occurs, you guys get the first phone call, and the receptionist and the phone operators and everybody knows that they give it to you. I will, for the hospital folks in the room, I'm going to tell you one last story. I can't tell you the client, but this is the funniest thing in the whole world, and it's funny if it weren't so sad. A patient did jump out of a window because the patient did not want to undergo heart surgery the next day. A TV station got wind of it and called the operator and said, "We heard somebody jumped out of the window." The operator said, "No, I haven't heard anything." And that was the end of the story. It happened. And you talk about getting lucky. So anyway, that's my message. It's an exciting field to be in. You got to think ahead and you got to use your head. And when all else fails, we as PR people have great common sense. Let's use it. Thank you. I'm sorry. I ran late.